Our special holiday week broadcast of Guest Star features the music of Jeff Alexander with his orchestra and chorus and presents as its special guests the twin stars of Light Up Time, lovely Dorothy Kirsten and our holiday host, Frank Sinatra.
Thank you, Don, and hello, friends. It's always a pleasure to be with you on the Guest Star series. And today's program is especially important to me because it marks the third straight year in which I've appeared on the Christmas week broadcast. And Dorothy and Jeff Alexander and I have planned a show playing it safe all the way, strictly loaded with favorites and fun to do. And we shall start off with me playing the part of the little man in the weather barometer. I pop out of the house with frost on my beard and predict light snow, followed by lighter music. Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lane, snow is glistening. A beautiful sight, we're happy tonight. Walking in a winter wonderland. Gone away is the bluebird. Here to stay is a new bird. He sings a love song as we go along. Walking in the winter wonderland.
Ho, ho, ho! Welcome, everyone, to the 2005 PPH Christmas Party. I am Dr. Keith Lipinski. We have Zach Arnold in the production booth pulling the string, as he always does. Zach, say hello.
Hey, Keith. Keith, I'm going to go on mute now. I'll just be on mute over here. So, wow.
We've got...
Really, 2005 impressions are the fucking best, you know?
We've got Mike
Maybe
Sanford.
I, Mauro Ranello, can come on and talk to you for 28 hours and with my Paizan Mike Sempervive.
We do have the Paizan Mike Sempervive right here beside me. And Mike, we've got a lot of great things to talk about today. We're going to talk about New Year's Eve in Japan. Big stuff coming up. We got a Bob Sapp fight. Kazuyuki Fujita is probably going to fight someone. Mirko Krokop is probably going to fight someone. Big things happening. The Tokyo Dome looks like shit because, well, Inoki's killing New Japan, but I know you're going to defend it because that's what you do, Mike, because you do love the New Japan. And one day, I'm sure it will pay off for you and things will turn around for that company. Oh, I could barely say that with a straight face.
You did okay there. I thought that was fine.
Yeah. Like, just stay with it, Mike. You'll one day.
Oh, no, I'm sure I'll retire and then come back for a little bit.
Of course. But we're going to have some great interviews. We're going to be talking to Samoa Joe himself from Los Angeles,
Poolside?
California. Poolside,
Will
of course.
Be poolside. Okay. Oh, how marvelous is that?
Yeah, it's absolutely marvelous. And Don Fry will be joining us from the set of a movie.
Let me in. He's the damn patron saint of men right there, Don Fry.
He will no doubt be... insulting us and telling us he did things with our mothers, but we'll allow it because he's done for
because him. He probably did. Like, hey, let's be honest here.
He probably is our dad. So,
nothing wrong. What's wrong with that? That's like the best. I wish that's what I was getting for Christmas this year. I wish I was finding out that Don Fry, that I'm actually Mike Fry Sempervive.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. And we're gonna have some great commercials as well. Matt Murphy.
Murphy's book?
He's going to be telling us all about his book later.
Battle-wonderland.com?
Yeah, absolutely. And he
made... ProDVDSource.com?
But just
for all your online poker bets?
Absolutely, yeah. You can hit them up on the website or in the trunk of a car outside an IWA Mid-South show.
To ask one of the boys. He probably has a spiel full of DVDs for him.
And, of course... Matt Murphy, I shouldn't spoil this, but in his little segment earlier, aka his commercial, he will have some derogatory comments to make about a certain wrestling legend. So
watch that wears Uggs. Let's remember Uggs and let's never forget.
Uggs
just in case in the future there's a way to communicate in 140 characters or through pictures where you will basically see a little mini Vader, not the luchador.
So lots of great stuff coming up here on the show. Zach wants me to redo all that, so we'll start.
Hey, Mike, Keith, your volume levels are up a little bit more. So, well, I feel like we're doing a Marty DeRosa thing, and I already hate this, Alan. So I kid, of course.
I'm not sure who that man you referenced is, Keith, nice. Because it's 2005. He's yet to be born. So
that's right. He is only right now. He is only 13 years old. So
let's kick things off with the PPH Christmas show.
And this is where you insert the bingo tumbler playing Jingle Bells, right?
I mean, I'll insert something. I haven't really thought this true, but fuck it.
I couldn't tell at all you didn't think things through here, Alan.
You pressed my memory, though.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't know. If I knew, if you would have given me the format sheet beforehand, I could have found some other awesome references. Like, one of the references I want to sit there and say is, will this be available, like, the first two episodes of the PPH in real player format only?
I know how we'll bring it back. All right, everyone, we are back. This is the DKP Christmas Party. I believe there was... It looked like we might have actually got the PPH Christmas Party going on here, but unfortunately, it's 2017, and we couldn't find an app that would play a real player file, so you're just going to have to settle for the DKP, and that means me, Alan, but I do have with me Dr. Keith Lipinski returning to the show. Dr. Keith, how are you,
oh,
sir?
Oh, my goodness. Wow. I really feel that the Dr. Keith Christmas Mansion now is sort of like a TARDIS, where it basically go back in time and get the best of the audio world from 2005. But, Alan, thank you for letting me come on my show again. It's always a pleasure, buddy. Happy holidays to everyone listening right now, all five of you. I'm thrilled to be here.
Five. You're
well, I know I was probably inflating the numbers there.
Inflating the numbers. I hope you didn't pitch inflated numbers like that to Flow Slam for AAW a year ago, Keith.
No, trouble in a court of law. No. I think the best thing about Flow Slam is the fact that, wait, are they still a thing? Are we still? I forget. Are we in 2005 or are we back right now in 2017?
We are in the year of the Lord 2017, and by the Lord, I of course mean the great booking of AAW Professional Wrestling.
Wow,
which is the Lord's work.
5-star segue.
the Lord's work indeed. And we're going to talk a little about AAW, and I'm going to kiss your ass, Keith, a lot. So get ready.
this is the most erotic holiday ever right here on the Dr. Keith Christmas show. But what a year 2017 has been.
Hey, by the way, I just Googled something here, and I just found an article on Pro Wrestling Torch from 2004, March 20th, 2004, titled,
oh God,
The Return of Lipinski's Lounge, radio show, WrestleMania 20, and it says, by Keith Lipinski, Torch, Bad Boy, and Team and PPH Team Challenge Series champion. I think that was even before my PPH listening. I don't remember the Team Challenge Series. There's a quiz question. Dr. Keith hasn't written anything for the PWTorch.com in a while because A, he's a censored comment. B, he's been far too busy with the Peresu Power Hour. Peresu Power Hour. As you can tell, I've always called it PPH because I just realized I can't say the full name. Or
it's not
PPH,
an easy word to say.
The most heterosexual Japanese wrestling radio show available on the internet today. Wow, Keith, that's in 2017.
2005 was a much different time for everyone, guys. So back then, you could sit there and claim how heterosexual your show was.
Keith wasn't woke yet in 2004.
I'm glad someone found the old quill and scrolls that I did back in the day for the PW Torch, where I met Mike Sempervivi.
Option C, gave up wrestling writing for Lent based on the hilarious movie 40 Days and 40 Nights.
Well, great movie if you've never seen it. The chicken there is unbelievable. I can still say that in 2017, right? I said nothing. Yeah. So.
I think you're good with that one.
I think so.
Option D, does anyone in this lounge understand the pressure of being a successful dentist who's painfully ticklish? Did Mike Lano take over the column? E
for a little bit. Yeah, I love that.
None of the above. F all of the above. G who? Said Jerry Lawler in mid-90s style voice.
Sorry.
If you want to continue that article, I would suggest.
I would suggest a fine donation to stop this madness right now. So I believe that was towards the end of my Torch run, where it was something where I was enjoying. I found out that actually talking was a lot easier than writing. Hence, therefore, I would just talk more as opposed to writing for. It's not like we had this lovely Siri and dictation apps back in 2005, where I could just sit there and put all my misguided comments all in one place. So, good times.
There's plenty of other gems in this that people will enjoy checking out if they do.
Oh, marvelous! Really, really, some fantastic holiday reading right there.
Lounge dress code is on there as well. So,
is the Torch style guide mentioned at all? So,
I don't see the Torch style guide, but I do see nicknames. You're not the only one with a nickname, Mr. Bad Boy. You also have nicknames for. Zach Arnold and Mike Sempervivi. Mike Sempervivi is Money Mike Sempervivi.
Wow. You know, the sad thing is, I wonder what that Bitcoin currency is worth now.
Do you have any guess of what your nickname was for Zach Arnold?
The most dangerous man in pro wrestling radio?
No. It's Zach, the Martha Ray of the PPH Arnold.
Oh, God. I bet as an Irish person, you can totally get that reference. So, you know, Martha Ray was a comedian back in the 1940s, and her nickname was the Big Mouth. And I never saw any of the comedy that was known as Martha Ray. However, she was basically known in America for two things, Alan, during this time period. Number one, she was a sponsor, or, you know, a celebrity sponsor of this Polident denture cream. And her key line, her motto was, get some clean even in between. So the other thing that she was known for was obviously her big mouth, hence the name Big Mouth Martha Ray. But more importantly, she married a man by the name of Mark Harris back in the day. And the thought was that Mark Harris had dalliances with, you know, with both men and women, and was marrying Miss Kay for her money, which there was a big, huge gap in age. So Mark Harris would go on the Howard Stern show frequently, and his appearances always tickled what was left of my funny bone at that time. So that's why I always thought that Zach was usually the biggest mouth, not big mouth pro wrestling, that was around during that time period.
Big Mouth Loud.
So, Big Mouth, exactly. Big Mouth Loud, my friend. So,
I watched a Big Mouth Loud match the other day, actually, as it happens.
What'd you watch?
Munenori Sawa versus Katsuhiko Nakajima.
That's a fine-sounding match, right? Was it enjoyable?
It was very enjoyable.
Look at that.
7 or 8 minutes.
I like how Alan gets in the holiday spirit by watching Big Mouth Loud matches. So.
Oh yeah, and listen to old PPHs on my real player.
Oh, good lord!
My real player device.
I honestly have all the PPHs, including those original real player files, because that's how everyone recorded back in 2003. I have them all somewhere, and I really feel that I should just give them as a gift. And if anyone wants to sift through them and potentially ruin any political aspirations that myself, Michael Sempervivi, or Zach Arnold might be privy to, please go ahead.
Mike Sempervivi definitely sounds like he has political aspirations.
He's obviously going to be the mayor someday. You know,
the mayor of Sandy Fork, Delaware. It's coming out of him,
believe,
or Papa
so.
Briscoe.
Ooh, but if they were a joint ticket together, like, you know, I could see those two guys like in a really awesome buddy comedy movie together. You know, like, you know, where like Mike's like, you know, telling Jay to take out the trash, and Jay's telling Mike to eat shit. So fun times.
Well, Keith. We can't doss and mess around here all day. We've got to talk some business. And business for you right now in the world of professional wrestling is no doubt AAW Pro Wrestling Redefined. And 2017 has been quite the year of growth for AAW as a promotion, both in terms of business and in terms of creative and in-ring output. I think, from my point of view as an outsider, I would say it's comfortably the best year in promotion history. From your point of view as someone behind the scenes in there, running the promotion, helping run the promotion, helping produce the promotion, helping on the creative side of the promotion, working with the wrestlers. From your point of view, is this the best year AAW has had?
Yes, it has been. It has been for a number of factors. I mean, when you look at our attendance this year, we've had an incredibly solid year. When you look at some of the stories we've tried to tell as well, the storyline with Eddie Kingston and David Starr, the storyline with Phoenix trying to finally defeat Sami Callihan and win the AAW championship, to the rise of DJZ. I mean, it's been a great year for us at AAW. And I think also we've done more shows this year. I mean, when we came in January, we started running in LaSalle, Illinois. So we've run a number of smaller shows this year in the greater Chicagoland area. And by Chicagoland, I mean like 90 minutes. Like, you know, LaSalle is only about 90 minutes away from Chicago, although no one from LaSalle should ever say that they're from Chicago, because reality, you're from LaSalle. Come on, that's 90 minutes away. Stay in your sack of the woods. But the LaSalle shows have offered us the opportunity to try out new guys there and new stars. So I think what AEW has done really well this year is bring in top level talent, mixed up the talent pool a little bit, but also given chances to the young bloods, as I like to call it, not to be confused with the Patrick Swayze movie. I mean, guys that we've seen this year, like a Myron Reed, like a Paco, like guys like a Jake Something, Connor Braxton, like guys that aren't necessarily quote unquote, oh my God, dream match guys that they're booking, but guys that are sitting there and that are hungry right now. So it's a good time right now to be a fan of AAW, just for the fact that I think we're trying to sit there. We're not only giving them guys that they know and love, we're trying to show them the new and best talent that's coming out of this area of the Midwest. For a long time, Chicago wasn't necessarily getting a lot of new wrestling superstars. Like, it's not like Chicago was a hot breeding ground of talent. So we had to look outside the box, and we found a lot of guys that are hungry and want to sit there and want to succeed. And what a better place than here in AAW. Like other guys I can mention, like Stephen Wolf, Trey Miguel, yeah. Like those, yeah, guys. Love both have had a phenomenal year. And I think as a tag team, as Air Buds, formerly Eclipse, I think those two guys are really, really solid together. And then you get guys like Penta L0M, or whatever we're calling them this day. I mean,
Pentagon Jr. on this show, I have decreed that.
Oh, that's fine, as long as we don't get sued by Dorian, you know, like, you know, I know Dorian is a regular listener, one of the five, so it's one of those things where I don't want to get sued. But, like, guys like that, I think we've seen in 2017 just so much greatness in AAW. I mean, I was, myself and a good friend of the show, Rob Naylor, were talking, and I was compiling a list of AAW matches that, you know, he wanted to sit there and catch up on AAW and ask me, like, what were your, like, top 10 matches for this year? And it was really hard, just because we've had so many shows this year, and I know this sounds like, you know, first world promoter booker problems, but it's one of those things where we've had so many shows this year that some of the stuff is going to get sort of lost in the mind. But I was thinking about it. Our second show this year, our first show in Chicago, had the Unfuckable Breakable Machines versus Rey Fénix and Albert, and that was awesome. Like, that's a match that I think people should definitely need to remember during this time of year when they're trying to think of the best stuff this year. And then, like, also we did DJZ versus Drew Galloway at our homecoming event in March, and it was a really career making match for the former Shima Zion. So, like, that, it was just, we've had a really, really great year. And I'm excited, though, for the fact that we originally do our biggest show of the year, the Windy City Classic, in November. And we moved it this year due to a number of our talents being in New Japan Pro Wrestling for the World Tag League. And so now we're doing it in December, and I feel it's great because we're going to be ending some things there that have been going on all year. So it seems like a right end. Like, it feels like if AEW 2017 is a book, Alan, I feel this is the best place to end the chapter. You know, we'll start some stuff for 2018 here, but at the same time, this is a fine way to end this chapter.
Now, let's break this down a little bit and talk about AEW in different kind of segments. So the first thing I want to talk about is this year, your kind of your top players, your main event guys, the guys that have kind of carried the top end of the cards, and guys that you've had on pretty much every card throughout the year. And I suppose the first name that would come to mind for AEW with that is Sami Callihan, who won the title back in 2016. I believe it was 2 years ago on this upcoming show at Christmas week, 2015, that he came back, and then he really made AEW one of his homesteading places in his first year back on the indies in 2016, and he won the AEW title and carried that title as the kind of top heel champ all through the majority of 2017, up until he lost to the man who was chasing him for the title that you mentioned earlier, Rey Fénix. So talk about Sami, what he is like as a performer in your guys, as someone to work with. For me, where I was really impressed with Sami this year was when I saw him at WrestleMania weekend as a real, because this was the hero had left the indies obviously this year, and it was like you wanted to see kind of who would step up into a hero type role on shows in terms of working with younger guys, trying to encourage other guys, not just looking out for themselves. And it really was clear to me at Mania weekend that Sami was kind of trying to be that guy. He ran his own show, obviously the Pro Wrestling Revolver show, and he was hustling from that show to other shows, working, bringing guys with him, trying to give exposure to younger guys. It was really cool to see, and I said it to him. I was very impressed to see that. Now, in the ring, Sami is a guy who he just goes all out all the time. Do you find that with Sami you need to almost like get him to rein it back sometimes a little bit, because it's too much on all the time? Because I think that's the only thing with Sami that I ever find is it's just too much. He needs to rein it in a little bit, and I think that might have helped him on his recent trip to Japan, if he just kind of reined it in a little bit, wasn't so 1000% Sami Callihan right from the start. But he was obviously a guy you guys could rely on to have really good matches and to carry the big belt, as he calls it, and build heat on the idea of someone taking it off, and he did a great job with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also the one thing I've always told him to tone it down on is the fucking spitting. So, like, I hate to sound like Frank Talent right here, smelling with Filet-O-Fish breath, but I think Sami Callihan, if anyone's responsible for the success that our company has had over the last 2 years, it's that guy. Like, I remember, sitting with him in the back. He came in 2 years ago during our Thanksgiving weekend, a Windy City Classic show, and it was a surprise. I remember being at the gym at my office and talking with one of the owners of AEW, Mike Pekovich, sitting there saying, yeah, we contacted Sami. He's going to come in on Saturday, but it has to be a complete surprise. So I remember being backstage with him knowing that Sami was going to come, and I remember Sami just looking at me and being like, God, Keith, I'm really fucking nervous right now. But that night he came in, and it really sparked the acclaim. And then when he won the championship belt from Eddie Kingston and then took it worldwide, like, he was a guy that the company had enough faith and trust in because of, his run before and the fact that he really put AEW on his back. So for that, I mean, I personally, and I think all of AEW, is grateful for what Sami Callihan has brought to the table. I mean, his wars last year with Pentagon were outstanding. I mean, he was probably Pentagon's best matches, non-Chris Hero style, were with Sami. And then it led into a bigger storyline with him and Fénix that basically was a big part of this year. And then also him coming with us with guys that he liked, that feels that we should give a chance to. I mean, he's a guy that Danny Daniels listens to, which is a good thing. I mean, I'm not saying that Danny doesn't listen to a lot of people, but he's a guy when it comes to other guys where we were sitting there willing to give guys that he knew, like a lot of those Ohio kids, owe their opportunity to Sammy Callahan and the trust that we've had with him. And in terms of great matches, I mean, when we were talking earlier, when I was mentioning the list that I made for Naylor, one of the matches on there would be Candice LeRae versus Sammy Callahan.
That's probably the first one I'd think of in terms of Sammy. I thought he did a awesome job in that match.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And he went into that match though knowing that he wanted to sit there and show off what him and Candice could do together. You know, he wasn't about how good can I look during this match. It was more like how good can we make this match, you know? And then you also have to think about those six-man tags that we did this year with him and the Killers versus a variety of opponents. I mean, at our first Logan Square show of this year, he fought Albert in a match, a very underrated match, in my opinion. I'm sorry, ACH. I keep on calling him by his real name, but really, we'll let it pass out. We probably won't, but
no,
you probably won't, because of course, good for you, Alan. Good for you taking that lo-fi approach. But I mean, he faced ACH in the second or third match of the show, and then came back in the main event and wrestled with Jake Crist against AR Fox and Ray Phoenix to lead to AR Phoenix winning the AEW Tag Team Championships. So, you know, he's been a great source of our success in this year. And then also the fact that with him getting the New Japan tour has allowed us to sort of, you know, he hasn't been towards, you know, since losing the title to Phoenix, he hasn't necessarily been towards the top of the car in the main attraction in a while. And it's something where with everything that's going on right now in AEW, that could potentially be something, a big point of Sammy's 2018 right there. So, you know, I enjoy working with the guy because I think still he cuts some of the best promos in this business. You know, as long as he's not spitting at my fucking camera, he's a good boy in my eyes.
Yeah, it's if he can get rid of the spitting, a personal thing for me, and I'm sure others would disagree, but I'm not a big fan of the gear right now that he's rocking. I'd like him to go back to his old gear, but that's just...
He rocks a nice vest. You don't enjoy the vest?
I always wonder, it must be so uncomfortable, especially seeing him at Mania Weekend going around from show to show. I was like, how is he fucking wrestling?
Well, he's all formal then. He's able to sit there and work around with a nice vest, a nice collared shirt. I think he was on something with that nice look right there. So that way he can sit there and go in an office and work in a cubicle for a few hours and then go out and wrestle, you know?
I can't imagine Sammy Callahan
trying to be like you
office.
And me and everyone else that wears a vest on a regular basis, Alan.
I would take great enjoyment about seeing Sammy Callahan rock into my office in full Sammy Callahan form and just see what madness unfolded.
Could you see him knocking on the door and asking for the file? Where's the file at? I have a meeting in 10 minutes.
Where's the file?
Where's the file at, Alan?
He it's going to be interesting to see him next year because, of course, with him losing the title, it's kind of he's kind of now more on the good side of the equation. The fans are giving him the respect that he has earned from his title reign, and he's reciprocating it back to him. And we saw during the Lineham tournament, which we'll talk about in a bit, that he was very much on the good side of the fence, and he was used very well to really heat up Jeff Cobb, and Jeff Cobb, who of course will be a big part of the wrestling stable going forward, which we'll talk about that in a minute. I just want to go back to some of the other kind of big names that you used during this year right on top of the card, and of course the man who took the title from Sammy Callahan, Ray Phoenix, and his brother Penta El Cerro Miedo, or as I like to call him, Pentagon Jr. So
absolutely,
the Lucha Brothers, Keith. What I like about them in AEW is we see them, for the most part, as singles competitors in AEW. And I prefer them both as singles guys, the tag guys. I think you get the most out of them. I find when they're in tags, they sometimes just telling a story isn't as important to them in the match as just doing a load of crazy shit, which they are as good at doing a load of crazy shit as more or less anyone. But in singles, you get more of a story out of them, you get more of a feel of a contest, out of them, and I think they thrive in that environment. And ending the year, or not ending the year, but as the year was coming to the close, Pentagon was the heritage champion, and Phoenix was the heavyweight champion, and it was really cool. I thought that was a great dynamic, and I'm looking forward to seeing how Phoenix's reign continues going forward, and he's obviously got a big match coming up this weekend. So what has it been like for you to be able to use two guys like the Lucha Brothers, who are really in the peak of their powers right now, peak of their popularity, and just to have guys from Mexico, from another country, come in and adapt so well to the environment that you guys have cultivated?
It's been quite enjoyable, as you can imagine. I enjoy them as a tag team, but I definitely enjoy them more as singles. You know, I think that they actually had a really kick-ass singles match at our October LaSalle show, which is now available on the High Spots Video Network or AEW On Demand. They are two guys that really, in a year, in the last few years, we've been more based on, and just in the independent wrestling world, has been more based with dream matches, these awesome, awesome matches, but don't necessarily have the characters so much. But both Phoenix and especially Penta are two well-known characters that basically can hardly do any wrong within that wrestling ring, you know, and watching them grow and also watching their English get, you know, muy bueno this year has been a great thing. So I like both guys. I think they both just have a certain aura and feel about those guys where for wrestling fans for a long time or someone that's just coming to a show because it's something to do, like they definitely bring a lovely experience and dynamic. And they're two guys that I absolutely love and absolutely enjoy working with. You know, I for one, I'm very involved in the creative end when it comes to promos and such. So a lot of times Penta and I will go over what we want for promos, like the promo that he did about Keith Lee. You are big, you are bad, but today I kill you. Like that was something literally was said to me to Pentagon 2 minutes before we shot it, you know, like, and just, you know, it's something where they both are incredibly hard workers and both guys just really, you know, I could sit there and put them up against any guy on the roster and I know it's going to be a good time, you know, and they both, you know, I believe it right now with Rey Fénix as our champion. I'm thrilled to see what's going to happen with him this year. Penta just being there just brings such an ambiance and such. It's a combination of slightly Darth Vader with a little bit of Hulk Hogan on the inside, brother. So, you know, just two great guys. Hopefully we'll be using lots of those guys next year. I know they're confirmed for a bunch of shows. And it's also something where, much like Sammy in New Japan, when Lucha Underground is filming, potentially they might be gone for a while, but then they'll come back even more. And it's something where they can potentially take a small break for us. And when they come back, it's still going to be the same. There's still going to be guys that are towards the top of the card and guys that we can put in up against anybody. And if you haven't seen it yet, because I know you haven't, Alan, and it's very upsetting. If you haven't seen Penta versus Zema Ion from our Unstoppable show, now available at Smart Mark Video and also High Spots, definitely something to check out, including an insane balcony dive and potentially the last balcony dive at Logan Square Auditorium. As they've always told me, please no balcony dives. Our balcony is old. It might be fragile. We don't want anyone to fall off or, you know, basically sue the building. And then, of course, DJZ dove off of it. Not onto a crowd of people, not onto refs, just onto Pentagon proper. So there's a picture up there that Zema put up of him diving off of it. And you see all these people like just being so incredibly excited. Like I imagine they all look like you, Alan, when you're watching wrestling, like when you're just totally into it, all happy, all excited, your phone out taking a picture. And there's a picture with a guy wearing a blue sweatshirt to the left who looks very concerned and or constipated. And it's basically the building owner as that was going on. So, and as soon as that match was over with, he came and found me really quick. And hence, that's the last time dives. I mean, the thing was, it was one of those things where we were going through the match and Zima suggested something to me, I made sure I cleared it with boss real quick. And the boss was like, no, they don't need to do that. And so I was like, go talk to boss so that he doesn't have to do it. While Zima was talking with boss, he pitched the idea of the balcony dive. Boss was fine with it. However, boss did not know that they're not supposed to be jumping off the balcony. So it was one of those lovely missights in communication, but honestly, it turned out awesome. And just, it was a fantastic match and a really nice moment for a guy who, you know, really, this has been an eye-opening year for Zima Ion, at least in terms of AAW. Like, the lucha training that he's getting right now is really doing something special with him. So, you know, I was very, very sad to hear about his injury, but I believe that he will be back before we know it. By the way, that doesn't mean he'll be back this weekend coming up at 115 Bourbon Street, guys. I just want to put that out there right now. Like, hopefully he'll be back in time for February or March.
I'm just surprised and intrigued to hear about what a large level of involvement Sasha Banks has backstage at AAW.
It's actually Danny Daniels dressed up like Sasha Banks. So, uh-oh, did I say that out loud? So, you know.
Former member of the New Carnage crew, Danny Daniels?
Yeah, he's the boss right there. You know, like he really, between myself, him, and two other individuals, we are the AEW Brain Trust, and we apologize for anything that we've suggested this year.
I apologize because it is, of course, the new and improved Carnage crew.
Absolutely, absolutely. They, you know, like, you smell the doo-doo? So,
I'm glad you mentioned Pentagon's promos. Just the last thing to mention on those guys before we move on, because Pentagon promos are like nothing else in pro wrestling. They're
absolutely,
and they're able to. Not only is he able to say literally anything, it could be like the stupidest thing in the world, and it comes off amazingly badass and cool. And he's doing it in Spanish. And I don't understand a lick of Spanish. And he's just between the way he vocalizes everything and with the subtitles there on the screen, it just comes across so awesome no matter what he's saying. I love Pent. The two things that, and I'll give a sidebar here with AEW, one of my favorite things about AEW, which I don't know why more promotions don't do, but hey, you'll take it. It helps you guys stand out if no one else wants to do it because they're lazy or whatever, then sucks to be them. But AEW does a great job with backstage promos throughout their shows. Marty DeRosa is fabulous in the role interviewing guys backstage. Keith, of course, is fabulous in the role of filming said interviews and occasionally chiming in with a Keith nugget of wisdom during it. Eddie Kingston will always give you a shout out during them. I always enjoy that. But in these promos, the ones that when they pop up, I'm like, oh, here we go. This is going to be awesome. It's Pentagon and Trevor Lee. Because whenever those two guys are backstage with a mic in front of them, it's gold.
Oh, yeah. The damn best. Yeah. It's something where I've always been a big fan of promos. Like, that's always been my big catch right here in pro wrestling. And that's something where I really think you can get a sense of who the guy is through the course of the match. Of course. I mean, that's fucking obvious. But when you sit there and actually hear them talk and say what they need to say, it's a lot different. Like, you sort of get the feeling for them and you could sit there and push several things. So I'm usually running around. If I'm not ringside shooting some stuff, I'm usually sitting there and trying to sit there and get their spirits captured on screen, just because I feel that just that's such an added dimension, and that's not a thing that a lot of places do. A lot of places will sit there and give you match after match after match, which is, I'm not saying that's not a bad thing, but it's something where we just need a little bit more. You know, there has to be a reason for things happening. You know, like, there has to be something behind it, or potentially, you know, just it can't just be all about moves and what's going on in there. And it's something where that's why we have all those promos that go on there. That's why I'm just going crazy just sitting there trying to shoot as much stuff as possible. I think at one show, I think I had something like 20-something promos. And I feel sorry for Marty DeRosa and our other interview, Sarah Shakoy, where I'm just sitting there saying, hey, guys, come on. Like, I need you for this, you know. But then it's sort of a timing thing where it's like, I can't have too many with Marty because I don't want it to be back to back to back. So it's something where I have the single one. But it allows me to work with some of the finest wrestling talents in the world. And it also allows me to deal with new kids that are out there right now. And that makes me just as exciting. You know, it's a very exciting thing to be part of that backstage process and to sit there and have a voice within a company that I think has done some really great things this year in the last few years. So it is a very, very fun time. And to me, promos are incredibly important. Like I watched a show from our legacy from December with the end of our women's tournament. And it was great because the only promos on there were the women that were in the finals. So it sort of boistered up where it wasn't a lot of other stuff going on, where it was just the people, the three main competitors to become the first ever AEW women's champion. I mean, that's something where, you know, Chicago has wanted, you know, ladies wrestling. It's been known for a hotbed for women's wrestling, thanks to companies like Shimmer and Rise. So for that, like, we wanted to crown a women's champion this year and have women be more front and center on the cards. And I was very happy with that tournament and how that all rolled out. And I'm curious to see what we do with it this year, because I think it's something that can be great. I think too much of one thing on a show just gets to be old and repetitive, but you slice it up a little bit differently where you potentially put a women's match or two. You put other things on there where it doesn't feel all the same and it doesn't feel like you're going through the same motion every single morning.
All right, Keith, I'm going to throw two other names at you as two guys who I kind of would think of as your trusty reliables on the AEW card.
And that Old Faithfuls?
Old Faithfuls, no doubt about it. First one, ACH, Albert, we mentioned him already. He is, to me, a treasure in wrestling. I can totally get that ACH has rubbed people the wrong way over his years in pro wrestling.
Because of the divorce?
I can understand how ACH might have occasionally rubbed people the wrong way in the course of his pro wrestling career, because he is no doubt a boisterous fellow, a energetic fellow. If you are around him for a long period of time, he may grate on you a little bit, so I can totally see that. But I will always go to bat for ACH, because I have seen ACH with fans. I have seen ACH just as a guy to have around at a wrestling show, and the energy he brings, and it is, to me, 100% a positive. And if you were in a bad mood and just didn't want to just be having fun, yeah, he might annoy you and you might just want him to shut up. But if you're a fan or someone who comes just to want to have a good time, or you're a young wrestler on the card who just wants to feel at ease, ACH is like the perfect guy to have around. And he is so enthusiastic, so positive. It's great. And in his performances in the ring, I don't think I could ever say a bad thing about any in-ring ACH performance I've ever seen, because he always busts his ass, and he's an incredible talent, and he's got amazing in-ring charisma. I think the world of ACH. I thought he had a great year in AEW. I've heard the match at the November show with Sammy Guevara was incredible, and I'm really looking forward to seeing that. But I mean, there's been so many great ones that he's had this year. The match he had with Matt Fitchett, the match he had with DJZ, the match he had with Kurt Stallion from First Round of the Lineham. I'm thinking of ones I've seen recently, but I know earlier in the year there was a bunch of dingers that he had as well. So he just was awesome this year in AEW, I thought.
He was, and it's been a lot of fun to watch him develop and such. Like we mentioned earlier on, the match that he had with Sammy earlier on this year,
where they just kicked off the show with a, was it the opener or was it like earlier on the show than expected?
I think it was the second match, but it bled in from the first match, because I think we did the six way to start off the match. Sammy went out to try and unmask Arrow Boy to see his handsome, rugged features, and that's when ACH stopped him and such. And that was at Take No Prisoners, which, of course, is available right now on the normal streaming sites that you go to, the High Spots Video Network, and, of course, AEW On Demand. But that was an incredibly fun match. But he's had a really solid year for us. Like, remember him and Shane Strickland from our 13th anniversary show,
that is,
Epic?
That was incredible. That's one of my favorite matches you guys have had this year.
Like, he's been really, really solid within the ring. And he's also had a chance to branch out other places. Like, I know you, for one, definitely miss the Troll Boys and such. But, I mean, like, thinking about some of the matches he had. I mentioned the match he had in January, but also in February, he and Air Fox and Phoenix faced Dave, Jake, and Sammy in the Killer Cult, and it was, I think, one of the best six-man matches all year. You know, it was. While I was up on stage filming it, I got a sense that this reminded me of, you know, really great All Japan six-man matches, minus, you know, Giant Baba, you know, lurking from the side of the stage and with a maybe a half smile. But no, just seriously, some really, really great stuff from ACH. And I'm curious to see what happens with him next year. I know that him and our good friend Matt Riddle had a match at our Legacy show that went the 15-minute draw, because usually non-title matches are a 15-minute draw. So we are giving them the 5 extra minutes that both men wanted next Saturday night at 1:15 in Bourbon Street. And the winner of the match will be the number one contender and will eventually get a title match, potentially sooner than later, against the winner of the Jeff Cobb versus Ray Phoenix match, which is headlining our big, huge landmark event at 1:15 Bourbon Street. So potentially big things to come for ACH. But yeah, he's a guy, he's a very dynamic performer in more ways than one. You know, like I think with what happened to him 2 years ago when he showed up for us unannounced at the Jim Lyman tournament to now, I think we've definitely seen a progression with him. And I think he's another guy where he's a wanted man. You know, like he did the Super Juniors tournament, the tag team tournament this year, and he did really, really good there. I think
really
working in different, I think working in different places gets guys exposure where they aren't necessarily the guy doing the same match everywhere, and has made them think about what they're doing. You know, ACH, one thing I like is when guys ask me what's next for me, or like, where is this going to, or what I'm doing. And some people might sit there and think, oh my God, that sounds like such a, you know, what the fuck? I mean, it doesn't matter where you're going. You're getting paid for the show. But at the same time, they say that not because they're trying to be a dick or anything like that. It's because they care so much about themselves and their character and want to know where the end game is, where the bottom line is. And I always appreciate that. And there's certain guys that I know they're just like, okay, what's going to happen with me next? Like, where are we going to go with this? And, you know, sometimes I honestly don't know, and I'll sit there and say, go text Danny. But other times I sort of have an idea and at least get them, their brains running and such. And ACH has always been one of those guys where, what's next? What am I going to do now? So, you know, like I think in wrestling that at times there's people that question because they're trying to stir the pot like the Hulkster brother, but they're questioning because they care a lot. So, and ACH is one of those guys. ACH is one of those guys that always wants to see his match afterwards or get opinions on his matches. So, you know, I like ACH, and I'm curious to see what happens in the future. And I think him versus Jeff Cobb or him versus Ray Phoenix in the near future sounds marvelous. But you could say the same thing about Matt Riddle versus, you know, Phoenix, or Matt Riddle versus Jeff Cobb. So it's interesting right now going into our biggest show of the year that we basically have potential for one of a few outcomes from that main event and from the number one contenders match. So I'm curious to see where we go forthcoming, but it's something exciting to get ready for 2018. Although we close sort of the chapter on certain things, especially the feud with David Starr and Eddie Kingston. We're potentially going to see what happens next with a number of our talents. So, and guys that we hopefully have locked in, or have locked in enough where we can basically tell a nice story with them, and also getting some great matches. Because as good as it is, Alan, to sit there and have some of the best matches in North America, it's a lot better if we can actually do something with the kids, or like put some new kid over, an old established talent, or tell a story that's long-term, you know.
Well, that's a perfect segue, because the other guy I wanted to mention as far as your old reliables, and we'll get to the kids in a minute, but as far as the old reliables, someone who is, I think, just as good a storyteller in pro wrestling, both in terms of in the ring, outside the ring, with promos, just a guy who, if I had a pro wrestling company, I'd want this guy, because you can do so much with him. Now, maybe he's feeling it some days more than others. Maybe his heart is in it some days more than others. You can probably expand on that, Keith. But Eddie Kingston is, at his best, one of the best. And you guys really used him well this year. And I was invested in his story thread this year. And I'm invested in his story going forward. So tell everyone about Eddie Kingston's 2017 in AAW.
Oh, man, Eddie had a year. Eddie had a year for sure. I mean, Eddie has been involved in one of our biggest stories of this year, which was him versus David Starr. And it started off very, very simple, where it was something where Eddie would pitch David to us as someone that we need to bring in, like a talented youngster and someone that should be involved in AAW here. And going into their match that they had earlier this year, Eddie had a hurt neck, and Eddie cut his normal, you know, complaining promo about how his neck was hurting and such. And, you know, they sort of made a gentleman's agreement about not going for the neck. So what did David Starr do? Of course, he went for the neck and got the win over Eddie Kingston. And it, you know, Eddie cut, shot a promo, basically went in the ring and grabbed the mic from our announcer, Jimmy D, and basically shot a promo about how this could potentially be the end of Eddie Kingston. And the thing is with Eddie, with some guys, you sort of know when they're working and when they're not. And Eddie's one of those guys where he is very unpredictable in that matter. You know, Eddie right now is a fucking seasoned veteran, Alan. Like, this is a guy that's been around a super long time. You know, if anything, the man can talk up a storm. The guy can go in the ring. I mean, he's not in the level of a Ray Phoenix, but the guy can still tell stories. And the story that him and David Starr have done this year has been magnificent. From David Starr coming in the company, defeating Eddie Kingston in his first match, and then coming back around and doing an I Quit match, and thanks to the interference of Jeff Cobb, losing the I Quit match with a chin lock. Of course, he was passed out. But still, that's been a big basis for, in my opinion, one of the better stories that have been told in wrestling this year, you know, because Eddie quit. And it's a t-shirt that David Starr has sold a lot of right now. And it's something that's been invested, and we've gone back to back. And now, at our show in December, on December 30th, this Saturday, at 115 Bourbon Street, it will be Eddie Kingston versus David Starr. We're putting an end to it. The loser of that match basically has to be the manager or do whatever the talent says for the course of the year. So it could lead to some very interesting hijinks going for next year. So for one full year, that's going to happen. So can you imagine, Alan, like, let's say if you lost a match to me and I told you what you had to do for a year, you know, like, you know, this it would be nothing but an AEW podcast, by the way, like, you know. Like, it would be just marvelous, you know, like I would be doing commentary in Germany, you know, like that kind of stuff. So, you know,
you'd be booking some Germans on AAW shows if I got to manage your career.
I realize it would become very much WXW AAW, like some sort of anagram of those two things, you know. But I hate to say it because he is old, but Eddie Kingston is our old reliable. He's a guy I know. I don't have to talk that much to him, and just let him know where the promo needs to go, and he'll make it happen. And, you know, he definitely needs to, you know, he definitely can do his talking in the ring. Like, the guy is just, he's an outstanding talent, and just, you know, I enjoy the living crap out of the man. He is very scrappy behind the scenes, but he is very passionate about what he does, you know, and passionate about getting out of the building as quickly as possible so he can go drink at the hotel bar. So God bless Eddie Kingston, and bless what him and David Starr have created this year and what they're going to be potentially doing next year as well. So he has always been known for someone with a dynamic gift of gab, and it's great
like yourself,
to be able to use him. Oh, yes. But the thing is, though, he brings such a reality to what he says that you don't find anywhere else. You know, I think it was maybe was one of our last shows last year. And I believe it was might have been our last show last year. And I believe it was Eddie and Homicide versus the Killers in a cage match. And after the match, Homicide was injured, and Eddie was yelling for me and Danny and the other people, and it just felt so incredibly real, because even I didn't realize where the line gets drawn with Eddie Kingston. Like, he's one guy where the legitimacy is there and will always be there. You know, after you get backstage, it might be completely different. He's like, oh, you played up real well there. It really looked like you were frightened, and it was because I was, you know. Like, when Eddie Kingston tells you, gets it right in your face with his finger on your chest and sits there and says, turn off the fucking camera, yo. You know to turn off the fucking camera, yo. He might have not said yo. That might have just been my dramatic recreation of it. But, you know, what a peach that boy is.
I would highly recommend people check out the July show, where you get just a great package of promos from Eddie, promos from David Starr, the I Quit match that they were in, a backstage promo with Jeff Cobb, which sets up Jeff Cobb's role in that match. Just that whole show was just a great piece of business, and that was kind of the night that I think David Starr's role in AEW was set alight and separated him from being a guy brought in to have some dream matches versus a guy brought in to be a centerpiece of the promotion. So that is,
and a lot of that is on David Starr. Like, David Starr is one of those guys that really, really cares about what he's doing and really wants to know where the future is and has had these ideas and such. Like, the stuff that David Starr has shot with what the hell's his name, former CZW booking guy who's has a wonderful Italian name, Giancarlo. Those things have been magnificent, but it wasn't us as an office sitting there saying, hey, can you shoot some stuff with that guy that does the really awesome stuff? Like, every time he sets something up, I send him a text message sitting there saying, I fucking hate you, just because he is really raising the bar on what can be done with independent wrestling. So, but, I give a lot of the credit to the wrestling storyline to David Starr, and the fact that, you know, like David Starr, a European superstar, pun intended there, you know, where he's not necessarily on every show, but his influence will always be felt in AEW. So, like, and we have him locked up for the majority of our Chicago dates next year. So it's going to be a lot of fun to see what happens with David Starr and the wrestling group, which, you know, look at it right now. You have David Starr, you have Jeff Cobb, and an angry, upset, not smiling Jeff Cobb. And you mentioned the Killers Among Us show, the June show that the everything went down in. There was promos.
July, right?
I think it was July. Yes. Let's go with July. Let's go with July for that show. So this is what happens when you get old, people. You fucking forget everything. So it's not I've never wrestled before, but my memory has become crap in the last few years.
It was United We Stand.
United We Stand. That's absolutely correct. But if you look at what had happened, I believe the show before that, it was Eddie Kingston versus Jeff Cobb. And we did a promo with Jeff and Marty sitting there saying, well, you know, you lost tonight. Maybe you're not showing the fire and killer instinct. And so then when we turned it around the next month, when Starr got into Cobb's face talking about the match with Eddie, and then Eddie and David Starr fighting around where all the tables are for the merchandise, and Jeff Cobb and Eddie, you know, yelling back and forth at each other. You know, it's little hints that we do there, but I think the guys played their roles perfectly in what they needed to be there. And more importantly, this got Jeff Cobb to where we needed to be, which really was cemented in that Jim Lynam tournament match against Sami Callihan.
For sure. All right, Keith, I want to talk about some of the young up-and-comers that we have making a real name for themselves in AAW, some of the guys who you may not see on shows in Europe or on the other big-name indies in the U.S. or going on New Japan tours, but they are great wrestlers in their own right, and they've been a big part of the AAW puzzle this year. And the first two I want to start with are, of course, the besties in the world, Davey Vega, Matt Fitchett, the purveyors of the... this guy says a lot, but I don't know if I wouldn't say this is the best wrestling theme song in wrestling. Of course, it's... I don't believe it's their own work. Is it, Keith?
No, it's not. I believe...
It is the Savage Garden, I believe.
Yeah. Do you know why they use that song?
No.
You don't know why?
No.
Oh, I am surprised by that. So, I'm not going to say who, but someone on the AEW roster at one point used that theme. And so it's more of a rib on them than anyone else. But they've taken that song, that beautiful emotional song, and really put it up to the heavens.
That song truly, madly, deeply, of course.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, you know, you hear it and you think you're in a dentist's office, but then when two boys wearing some sweet B-letter jackets come down holding those AEW tag team titles and just magnificent. If anything, it's proved how wonderful Davey Vega is in 2017 for the fact that he just, there is now no better wrestling scumbag right now than Davey Vega.
Oh,
like, he is just someone's
shitster.
He's marvelous. It's a perfect role for such an incredibly nice young boy. But he's really just done something where the last few shows we've had him on, you know, people, you know, Fitchett will tag him in, and all of a sudden, boo. So
it's almost,
you know,
there's an element of Steen and early ROH Steen and Generico there.
Yes. Absolutely. So it's they're a lot of fun together, and the fact that we were having them sort of as, you know, trying to do the singles run but sort of coming back as a tag team, and then them winning gold again has been just a whole lot of fun. You know, they still aren't necessarily on the same page, but at the same time they work really well together as a unit. So they've been a whole lot of fun, and it's allowed both guys to sort of get out there and spread their wings. Like Matt Fitchett has had those matches with Matt Riddle, with Zack Sabre Jr. He sort of had sort of the Matt Fitchett team trial series or singles trials matches this year. But he has stepped it up to the plate. But as a tag team, they work together so nice and so crisp. And it's just the dynamic is there because the personalities are there. And it's Davey Vega, you know, I'm going to give you a little spoiler in the November show. They came out there. Fitchett was dressed in gear. Davey Vega was in his nice suit that he wore during the night of the Jim Lyon tournament. Of course, he has like thousands of suits. He's a Men's Warehouse's official wrestler. So anyway, they ended up getting in a four-way tag match. But of course, Davey Vega had to go change. So literally, he left the match for a decent amount of time as he was changing. And I felt bad after the match because I should have taken my camera and gone in the back and watched Davey Vega changing ever so slowly. So, God bless Davey Vega. God bless those besties coming out with that wonderful Savage Garden song.
Yeah, and Fitchett is a hell of an athlete, and he's someone who's only going to get better. I think he's still finding like that last piece of the puzzle in terms of his in-ring and being able to get the best out of himself and get the best out of his athleticism, but it's right there, and I think in 2018 he's really going to turn the page and become one of the best guys going.
And I think both guys have really done an excellent job, and we're talking about not just being in the ring. I think backstage,
oh, they're
cutting promos.
Yeah, they're
them and Marty DeRosa always together as gold.
Yeah.
You know, they've been, you know, talking about their old friend Billy Hodges, or like just talking about anything under the sun, you know, and like how Davey Vega had a thing eye wink and such. Like they are a true delight to work with. And I think them and our backstage interview, Marty DeRosa, have such a wonderful chemistry together that it's something where I don't want to shoot anything with them unless Marty's there, just because he can play off them very, very well. He can play off anyone. I mean, honestly, the best promo that I've shot this year, and I'm not talking in terms of dramatic effect or anything like that, was with Marty DeRosa and the Best Friends for them versus Vega and Fitchett for our show at Homecoming, which it was the day of that show, Alan, and you'll enjoy this as an Irish person, was St. Patrick's Day.
Oh.
So we shot the promo, and one of the things that Chicago does is they dye the river green for St. Patrick's Day, you know? And the key line of the promo was green equals gold. And we did it three times, and each time was worse than the other one, but it was without a doubt one of the funniest moments. Like I have somewhere on my hard drive the raw edited version of the promo, all three takes of it, and it's majestic. It makes that ROH stuff that was put out last week look like baby's play, you know, like where they're slapping each other's chest, talking about Chicago. I mean, it's marvelous, marvelous work. Like there's not many promo. I mean, I shoot a lot of promos, but a lot of times promos sort of become forgotten very quickly, but that's one that's always been on my mind.
Keith, take me back to a year ago, maybe a little over a year ago, let's say 18 months ago. Had you any awareness of the names Desmond Xavier and Zachary Wentz?
That would be from a Samuel Callahan, who knew Zachary Wentz and Desmond Xavier from them being Ohio boys or boys that were helped with their training by Dave Crist. So it was something where they were told that these were kids that need to go, and saw them, tried them in a few matches. Dez had that match with Ricochet last year at Showdown, which I thought was really, really good. And then from there, it was just natural to bring them in as a tag team.
What I want
to
ask you is, bearing in mind, okay, so you knew about them from Sammy, but you're just going on what you're hearing. Would you have ever expected that a year later, these two guys would be as polished and as incredibly dynamic and just their whole package as great wrestlers would be at the level it is so quickly, considering they're both still so new to pro wrestling?
Absolutely.
It's mind-blowing to me how good, like, Desmond Xavier, I know it's kind of cliche to compare him to Ricochet. Ricochet has done it himself, and it's kind of a cliche comparison, but it does kind of strike you. And the thing that's really striking to me is Desmond Xavier is like, he's like Ricochet, but he skipped the whole like 6 years of Ricochet finding himself, and he just kind of found himself straight away. And it's unbelievable to see how good that guy is. And Wentz kind of came to the fore. I had never heard of Zachary Wentz before WrestleMania weekend, and he was on, he was in a big ladder match on the Revolver show I was at. I think that was the only time I saw him over Mania weekend, but I remembered the name. Then I saw him pop up in AEW, and it seemed like over the summer he improved his look a lot. He was obviously working very hard in the gym, and he is a guy who, every time I see him, he just seems to be more composed, more comfortable within himself, and a better wrestler. And these two, they have the athleticism out the wazoo. They're able to do incredible things. When they start getting to grips with just being able to, I suppose, like, find themselves as characters. I think Wentz is definitely, he's kind of finding himself as a character, as like just this sick, crazy, nuts, just wild man, I think is how I'd best describe Zachary Wentz. I think there's still some character that Dez needs to find for himself. He's very chilled, very laid back, very cool. That's the impression I get when I watch him, and I think just more of his personality needs to come out, and when it does, watch out. And then I think just being able to use their athleticism in ways in their matches where they're able to tell more stories and engage the crowd in other ways other than just how spectacular they are. And when they do that, I think just watch out, because I mean, and it's how quickly they were able to put together the athletic side of the game and just being able to do everything that you could ever want to do in a pro wrestling ring in terms of just skill set, like physical skill set. I think they've been able to do that so quickly that when they get the more mental side of the game on their side too, it's these guys are going to be incredible.
I think these are two other guys who have really been helped by some of the overseas tours that they're doing, and I know that they actually have some overseas excursions coming up relatively shortly. So I too have been very impressed with what they've done. I think Dez is putting everything together, and Zach, they're really showing off their characters well. Zach is an absolute nut, but he actually has a real passion and fire for the business. Dez at times could be a little bit more laid back, but what he does in the ring is really phenomenal. So I've been very happy with their run this year. I thought the match that they had against the Lucha Brothers on night two of the tournament was very good, you know, with a nice champions match.
Yeah, really, really good. Do you know what their you mentioned Zach having a passion for business, just sparked my curiosity. What are they like in terms of fans? Like, do they go back a long way in terms of being into wrestling? Like, do they, are either of them sort of fans of Japanese stuff? Are they like, what do you know about them in terms of the pro wrestling that they like and how long they've been watching it?
I think that they're very passionate, but I couldn't sit there and tell you, yeah, they keep up to date with these promotions, Alan. So, but I know that they're both students of the business, where it's something where that, you know, people have different levels of passion for stuff, and the passion that these two boys have put on themselves for wrestling, and just the fact that they're so vocal after their matches asking how things were and what could do better. You know, usually after the course of the match, guys will sit there, and once the security is there, just in case they break up and have a fight, they'll talk through the match, and they're usually the people that talk a little bit longest, just to sit there and try and figure out, okay, what did I do that was really good in here? Better yet, what can I do to improve? You know, just on promos alone this year, they've really, really exploded into their own, where they've sort of figured out where their strengths are. Where Zach is sort of the, you know, there's a famous American cartoon where there's this big, huge dog, and this big dog is a big bruiser and stuff like that. And he might say a little bit, but there's a little scrappy dog sort of yipping all around him and such. Zach is the little yippy dog, where Dez is more of the cool, calm guy. But together they make a very good team. And I'm like, we've talked about many of these other guys, and I hate to sound like a broken record, like, I think 2018 is really going to be a great year for those guys. And I think Dez, with his exposure with Impact Wrestling, with wrestling, you know, some of the best guys in the world, I think it's really, the sky's the limit for both those guys, and I'm excited to see what they do as a tag team as they sit there and go back to places that they've been before, or potentially new places.
I also want to mention Trey Miguel and Stephen Wolf, who we did mention earlier, but very similar with them in terms of two guys who just so fresh into their careers, but just so polished in terms of the physical skill set, the athleticism, that again, like, to me, like, as a person outside of wrestling who has literally only stepped into a ring to do a quiz contest thingy on a WXW fan convention at a 16-carat weekend, I have no place to have any idea of what it's like to be a wrestler. But to me, it just feels like the athletic side of things and the skill side of things just would be so much harder to develop, and that, like, just the other side of the game is kind of like just a case of time and just being patient, and it'll all come together, no problem. But I think when you have that base of just being so skilled physically and athletically right from the start, like, you're bound for great things. And that's what I see with guys like Stephen Wolf and Trey Miguel, where they're just so talented, it's unreal. And Myron Reed, who you mentioned as well, you could throw him in there for sure with that. Like, those guys, it's crazy to see guys this young, Keith, be this physically talented. It's just, we're not used to it. And yeah, it's just then once they get the mental side of things, which again I just think is something that comes with patience and time and talking to people and studying and just leaving yourself be open to new ideas. I think when these guys get that side of things, they're going to be incredible.
I agree. I think Stephen Wolfe, I know he's done some shots for Evolve and such. I think Stephen Wolfe is one of become an incredibly talented individual in his own right mind. I remember during our Epic show from April the 8th from Joe's in Rosemont, I believe it was him and Trey versus the Besties, and it was they went 10 minutes and it was fantastic. Like, it just was a really good show. That was the match that sort of earned Wolfe and Trey a spot as a tag team, and more importantly, a spot in a pretty high paced AEW locker room. But it's something where we had seen Wolf and Trey working the LaSalle shows, and we realized that there might be something there with these two guys. Put them together as a team and see what happens. So I'm very happy with the stuff that they've been able to do together. I've been very happy with Myron's progress so far. But these guys are still a work in progress. But they're guys that are professional enough to sit there and sort of figure out what they need to do better. Where it's not necessarily the ego factor there for those guys. So, and it's something where we're one of the places that are using them, and it's something where it could lead to bigger things for them.
Yeah,
so,
for sure. Keith, because I'm not a great professional podcast host, I do not have a list of AEW wrestlers and names in front of me. I'm going off the top of my head through love and passion for this, Keith, and as such, I may have missed one or two names. So I'm going to give you a chance to mention anyone that we haven't talked about that you want to get to from kind of the core roster, but I also want to ask, if you were to pick one or two of the kind of outsider import talents that you kind of were able to use for maybe a dream match here or there, who were your favorites, both in terms of being able to just kind of work with them and also just in terms of what they did for you this year?
Awesome. Well, when looking at our locker room, one guy that comes to mind is Air Fox, the highest flyer around. Just such a myriad of different opponents
Sorry to interrupt, Keith, this year. Have you seen his... I don't know if he's been doing it recently with you guys, but
his posse
has he had the posse with you guys?
He has not. The posse drove up with him, but Mrs. Fox was not there. But I've met most of the members of the posse,
and
I enjoy it. But I mean, he comes out to the Space Jam for us.
The Space Jam music's amazing.
It's a whole lot of fun. So, but he's sort of become, when new guys come in, Fox will be one of those guys that we put him up against. And his stuff is always incredibly solid. He really reminds me of a modern day, like, Rob Van Dam, where he'll sit there and try and raise the bar on what is going to be considered, I don't know, safe. But also he just has a lot of fun in there. The matches they has had with Shane Strickland, his participation in a number of tag team matches. Like, he is a cornerstone right now of AAW, and I've enjoyed his work. I've enjoyed when we've had Big Keith Lee and Shane Strickland together as a team and bask in our glory. I think the match that they had against Matt Riddle and Zack Sabre Jr. at night one of the Lineham tournament was incredibly good. And I think Riddle and Sabre and Keith Lee and Shane as well are guys when they're very sought after demand athletes, and whenever they're available and we have freedom in the schedule, we love to have those guys there, but it's something where we realize that they have contracts in other places, matches that they need to do, but they're guys there that definitely we like to see as often as possible. Just in general, really, really good people. Paco Gonzalez, a young upstart that almost got killed in the ring a few years ago against Justice Jones, has proved to be sort of a cult icon in a number of our shows. So I'm really excited for him and X-Pac, better known as X-Paco, to be in the I believe they're going to be facing Connor Braxton and Jake Something. Two guys I think people really need to start looking at a little bit more, because they definitely have the size, the bodies, and
Seth Rollins
are passionate.
Right?
Yes. Braxton is a Seth Rollins trainee, better known as the hoverboard guy. He hasn't done the hoverboard thing in quite a while. So
he's been a whole lot of fun. It's been really awesome to watch him develop. But I mean, when looking at this year in AEW and all the people that we've had in there, it's really just been like it blows my mind the amount of talent that we've had this year. You know, Sammy Guevara wrestled on two of our shows. He had that barn burner of a match with ACH, and then he had a really nice three-way with Myron Reed and A.R. Fox at our last show, AEW Legacy. So he's a guy where I would like to see more of him next year. But I mean, just up and down the line, looking at this talent, guys like Kurt Stallion, you know, like there is really a lot of good talent that comes in AEW. Chuck Taylor. I would love to have Chuck Taylor on every single wrestling show that we do. When Josh Alexander needed to come on a honeymoon, he took his honeymoon to come see us in AEW, and we're grateful for that and really would like to see him and also Ethan Page on as many shows as possible. So it's been one of those dynamic years where I just look up and down on all the cards here. And you sometimes forget it because you're so busy with what's the next big thing in pro wrestling. Like, what's going to happen next? Like, who are the next up-and-coming guys? What are the big dream matches? What are all this stuff? Where you don't necessarily take a step back and smell the roses. But when I look up and down on the cards that we've done this year, and we've had a few shows, you know, this wasn't a once-a-month outfit. AEW has become a big force and been big entity in the world of independent wrestling in America. So it's been a hell of a run this year. So I've liked what we've done this year. You know, now would it be something where, you know, like I would like to see, you know, some new talents come in, some guys from the UK that we haven't used? Absolutely. Are there guys that I wish that we could use right now? Absolutely. But am I going to sit there and give those trade secrets here? Not necessarily.
Keith is, of course, referring to just really wanting to bring me in as a commentator for one of their big shows next year. But my schedule is just so busy that
you're so well booked, Alan. So, you know, it's crazy. But no, I mean, I think also our commentary this year has, with the addition of Tyler Foltz being all shows,
say,
sort of being the void.
I would have been so bummed if I didn't mention that before we finished here, because Tyler Foltz to me is, like, I think indie wrestling commentary gets a bit of a bad rap now because it was well deserved in getting a bad rap for quite a while, because there was terrible indie wrestling commentary everywhere. I was at the point a few years ago where I was like, just everyone just fucking do shows without commentary. These commentators in a certain, obviously we have certain places we can trust and we enjoy, like Excalibur, say, in PWG, but in a lot of other places it was just like, fucking just burn it all, I just want no commentary. And recently I think some really good guys have come through as commentators in different places. It's still not perfect everywhere, there's still some bad commentators around, but in a lot of places some real good talented commentators who aren't trying to put themselves over, who are just, and I'm not speaking of myself,
hey, you should you do a well job, pretty good job of putting yourself over.
Like Ian Riccoboni in Ring of Honor, I think is really good. Cole Cabana's found his calling as a commentator in Ring of Honor, he's doing really good. But Tyler Foltz to me is the guy who just immediately jumps out when I think, okay, this is what I want an indie pro wrestling commentator to be. This guy could be, and obviously Lenny Leonard, always amazing.
Oh yeah, the gold standard right there.
Lenny is great, no doubt about it. But Tyler Foltz is just a guy that I just think a new guy that's come up, and he has done a really fantastic job this year for you guys. I think he has a great balance between serious and also being able to be a little lighthearted and have fun when the time calls for it. He puts the wrestlers over, he calls the action, he knows what he's talking about. He's
having fun during it as well. Like, that's an important thing for any commentator, I think. Like, it's hard because when I did commentating in the past, I can't listen to any of that stuff now, because it was just like, it was about me trying to be funny at times or me being too serious at times. But I think what Tyler has done, and Tyler's been doing this for a while with a bunch of different groups, but Tyler definitely has sort of focus, and usually I try and, you know, I'll steal some of... What's up? Yes, he was a Dreamwave guy. Yeah,
I was thinking that must have been where he came from.
Yeah, yeah. Did Dreamwave, did freelance for a while, and then came under our budget because we knew we were going to LaSalle. We knew he knew the LaSalle market very good, but we knew we liked what we heard with Tyler. That doesn't mean he was the greatest commentator of all time, but we knew what we liked there. And it's hard because I've watched like 3 or 4 shows this week, Alan, because I've been trying to catch up and watch some recent stuff where I just listen to the commentary and I have to put it on mute because it's just so, there's no reason to yell at me constantly. Like, tell me what's going on. Tell me a story. Tell me, at least give me an idea of what's going on, even if you don't know what's going on. Make something up. Make the booker upset for all I care. You know, that's the thing that gets to me where it's sort of, you know, I was watching the show and there was a bunch of angle stuff going on, but I wanted the commentators to talk about the angle stuff that was going on as opposed to other things. And it's sort of like, this doesn't help me at all. Like, as someone, as a new watcher, as a commentator, your job should be telling me what's going on. And even if I've seen it before or know the storyline, punch home those points. Sit there and tell me these things that are happening there, just so then I'm a little bit more aware, because then I'll actually want to watch it a little bit more, as opposed to the feeling sometimes where it's sort of like, okay, well, so what? Why is this happening? Why do I need to care? You know, it doesn't have to be like that for every single match, but I know that Tyler is very good with Derek St. Holmes, our more relaxed announcer, and I thought Tyler and Phil Colvin together were a great match. Like, I'm very sad to see Phil Colvin, a long standard of AAW, being gone from AAW, but he's done it for so many years, and definitely mazel tov to him for such a great job being done and being the voice of this company for so long. So, you know, it's a hand at Tyler. It's a hand at Ivan, our main video guy, who takes care of all our lovely footage and makes it look so good and deals with my 28 or 30 text messages about promos and everything else. Or don't use that promo because we're not doing this now, or use that promo, but can you edit this part out? So, you know, we have a very great team right now behind AAW. You know, we have lots of people there right now that really help out the organization, from, you know, taking tickets and dealing with the money aspect to selling tickets during the course of the show. You know, it's something to behold. And we got some exciting things coming up. We're going to be running the Logan Square Auditorium, my personal favorite building to run a wrestling show in.
I love
them. Multiple time next year. Oh, it's the best. It's the absolute best. As long as you don't dive off the balcony in front of the owner, it is without a doubt like just such a great building, such a wonderful atmosphere for wrestling, you know. And we'll be back at 115 Bourbon Street. We now have 2 homes in Chicago, which is good. You know, as great as the ambiance in that Berwyn building was, which it was, the headaches that we got from there were just unfounded. I mean, the tournament, it was funny because I was getting these, you know, you were sliding in my DMs, about the tournament. But to me, the main things I remember about the tournament, besides, you know, the great matches that were on there, were just the feelings of, oh God, is the ring going to mess up tonight? Or like, you know, we had 2 ring issues on night one that sort of really hurt, in our opinions, our thoughts on the show. When you watch it on DVD, MP4, VOD, 8-track tape, you don't necessarily feel those things. But for us, the thing was, with Berwyn, we necessarily couldn't guarantee that it would be our best foot forward. The last thing you want to do while having a show is worry about the fucking ring. And, you know, it was just a constant thing. And I'm not saying that we will never be back at Berwyn, because really in this business, you should never, ever say never. But in general, if we're never back in Berwyn, that's totally fine. You know, I've said my goodbyes to the building, and, you know, good luck, good riddance, sort of thing. But, you know, I'm excited. We haven't been back to 115 Bourbon Street in a long period of time. And we've made that building what it is today for pro wrestling. Like, I remember the first few shows the company ran there, it wasn't necessarily the best place because it didn't have the Berwyn atmosphere. But I mean, when we have 500, 600 people there on Saturday night, December 30th, it's going to be something, you know, I hope it's something truly special, you know. And I hate to say that there and say that with every show. I just want fans to sit there and have a good time, enjoy the matches, you know, and just have fun with pro wrestling. Because honestly, that's what pro wrestling should be. I mean, pro wrestling should not be about, you know, just worry about how your crowd's going to be, you know, like pro wrestling, much like many things in life, is supposed to be a fun and a great time. I mean, it's something that can be debated. It could be discussed to death, but in general, you know, pro wrestling is still one of the greatest things in the world, you know, and I've been doing this now for way too long. And I'm still, I mean, I might show a little jaded edges sometimes, but I'm still always excited when it's time for that show. Like when I'm sitting there, when we're meeting together and writing the show, I still get, you know, I don't want to say the butterflies and goosebumps because I'm not Bobby fucking Brady, but I still feel that excitement and passion. And I really feel great for the fact that over the last 5 years, I've really felt I've helped bring some really, really great things to AAW. And I think AAW has brought a lot of great things to the great fans of Chicago, this wonderful wrestling city, which I love so much.
Well, Keith, I think this whole show has been a plug, but it has been a plug.
It's been a fine plug. And we haven't even mentioned how great Jeff Cobb is, by the way.
It has been a plug well earned by the year that AAW has had, the year that you guys have had there, and the content that you guys have put out. I can't encourage people enough to check it out. Sample some 2017 AAW. Don't just pick a match here or there. Try and find some promos. Try and get sucked into one of the stories that have been going and follow that through. And I think you'll see that it is a promotion doing a lot of great things and a lot of the things that a lot of people want out of wrestling. So going into 2018, it's a very exciting time. So
yeah, and Alan, can we mention, what was your favorite moment of this year so far with AAW?
I really did love the How the I Quit match unfolded. I thought that was just really, really good. The best match was, for me, definitely the Zach Elgin match from, the Logan Square show in March?
May. I think it was May.
Yeah, it was May, I remember, because I watched it in hospital, and I was in hospital in May. So
it was so good. It took this man to the hospital. Yes, was on the Take No Prisoner show on May 6th. So.
Yes, but that was the best match. Other moments,
To me the Sammy Callahan versus Jeff Cobb match from night two of the tournament.
That was so well done in terms of just taking the guy who had been the champion and had been the top guy, and then using him to be decisively beaten and just taken apart and taken out by the next heel that you want to heat up. And it was just such old school great pro wrestling storytelling, and the best thing about it was how the crowd reacted to it. They bought into it. I will take a reaction like that to a company trying something with a story that is built on the fans buying into what they're seeing and believing in what they're seeing. I will take that reaction every single time over crowds reacting because of some tongue-in-cheek comment or a crazy sequence or any just like oh, I don't want to make it sound like I'm burying like the Elite and the Bullet Club, because I feel like I've already done that on every segment of the Christmas show in some way, shape, or form. But it's just, that's what I like in wrestling. Just, you know, when something is just traditional pro wrestling storytelling and getting a great reaction from it, and when I think it's hard to do in this day and age with the modern fan, but when it's done, it comes off well. It's so great, and I'm rambling now, but that was just a great moment of
33 seconds. 30, the best 33 second match this year. I dare anyone to find a finer 33 second match this year, because it was a mugging, as we call it in pro wrestling, but it was a glorious mugging. So it was unstoppable and really cemented Jeff Cobb in our mind, and the Jeff Cobb that we didn't want to have. We didn't want to have old smiley, friendly Jeff Cobb. Let's wait until after the show. Right now, we need you to be the monster, the killer. And it was something that also led to the main event event or one of the semi-main events, the next show, where it was David Starr and Jeff Cobb versus the Killers. So it's led to other things and will lead to other things in the future. You know, it's not just us doing matches to appease ourselves, although we're very appeased when we make matches. You know, it's something where can we go long term with this and how can we have fun? So, you know, very much that match was, it was a huge highlight. That tournament, after all the ring stuff is said and done, was a great time for us and is available right now. And I definitely appreciate the fact that we have, you know, High Spots as a partner with us to basically provide AEW content for everyone. But if you want to keep up to date and get the most modern stuff, definitely go to our friends at Smart Mark Video. And also High Spots has our Blu-rays available so they can check it out. Because our shows run, I mean, it's not just wrestling. It's not just match after match after match. Like, I try and make sure that there's at least something in between each match so you can go use the bathroom or at least enjoy people talking to me. So,
well, Keith, it has been a pleasure talking AEW with you. I think everyone knows now where they need to go and what they need to do to enjoy some fine pro wrestling redefined. So,
excellent. Thank you,
Keith. It's a pleasure always having you on. And
Alan,
do it again,
you've done such a marvelous job with this show. I mean, you've actually had this show.
With the decorations here at the mansion.
Well, the decorations too, as well. I mean, look at this. But I mean, like, no, you've done such a marvelous job. I mean, you've had this show now for 8 years, right? Correct?
Yeah, just gone past 8 years. Yeah, that's true.
8 years.
Scary.
That's amazing. So, you know, like, pretty soon we'll be talking about how, you know, my son Gavin will be debuting for AEW facing one of Danny Daniels' sons. So it'll be really, really good, you know, and you'll be referring to me as Fritz.
Oh, dear. We don't want that.
I know. Well, that's why we don't have any guns in the house. So, such an awful, awful. I have to remind people.
Way to end the Christmas show.
I have to remind people every once in a while that basically, if they really do listen to any of the old Dr. Keith shows or the old PPHs, which, by God, I don't know if people actually do that. There is basically enough blackmail material on that for me and Michael Sempervivi for a long, 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 long time. So,
Chris Jericho could use it in his giant feud with Michael Sempervivi.
Brother, I really hope that all comes to a clip on the Battle Boat.
Yeah, so that's what I'm thinking.
I think they're just working, man. So, you know, you're not recording anymore, right? Right. Yeah, Sempervivi told me that is definitely the case. But seriously, Alan, and to everyone that's actually listened to the show, thank you so much for supporting Alan and his habit with the booger sugar and the sweet leaf and all the medicines that he needs. But more importantly, you know, thank you for supporting pro wrestling. Even if you don't support AAW, like, just the fact that you still care about pro wrestling after all this time, thank you. You have my love. You have my heart, much like pro wrestling does. So for everyone here at the Dr. Keith Lipinski Show, for Alan, for our time machine, for Zach Arnold's voice, this is Dr. Keith Lipinski signing off. So long, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Got you out, she got cool, cool, cool. と少し急いだ。ドアを開けた君は忙しく夕食を作っていた。誇らしげにプレゼントを見せると君は心から喜んで、その顔を見た僕もまた素直に君を抱きしめた。いつまでも手をつないでいられるような気がしていた。何もかもがきらめいてがむしゃらに夢を追いかけた。初めて怖いと思った。人を愛するということに気がついた。いつかのメリークリスマス。離れることはないと言った後で急に僕はなぜだかわからず泣いた。いつまでも手をつないでいられるような気がしていた。何もかもがきらめいてがむしゃらに夢を追いかけた。君がいなくなることを初めて怖いと思った。人を愛するということに気がついた。いつかのメリークリスマス。立ち止まってる僕のそばを誰かが足早に通り過ぎる。荷物を抱え幸せそうな顔で